kind of pop, maybe. Two Liz Mims, name of that track. And we had Nicola Son and João Donato, the Brazilian piano player, Je Voudrais Me Divertir, which is probably something like I'll have fun or something about having fun. And I'm pretty sure this might be a Brazilian, some kind of Brazilian composition. I'm not 100%. Nicolas Son is a Armenian French Parisian musician. So, some great songs there. Nicolas Son. And yeah, great, some great tracks.
This week at the Harvey Hotel, Tuesday, trivia night, $10 third special. Wednesday, pizza special, 20% off any pizza, 5 to 8. Thursday, jackpot draw, $700, meat raffle, and burger beer, $30. Friday, happy hour, 4 to 7. And rugby live on the big screen. Saturday, strap man and robber return, 7:30 to 8. And Sunday, brunch, 9 to 2. We look forward to welcoming you and yours for a great time in Raglan at the Harvey Hotel.
Starting a landscaping project or just need ideas? Come and see us at Raglan Landscape Supplies. We have all the landscaping products you need. From stones to sleepers, sand to bark, drainage meters to builder's mix, pavers to compost. We even have a plant nursery. We deliver to your door. We have free customer loan trailers. We also hire out a post-hole borer, concrete mixer, compactor and water blaster.
Please check out our website, www.raglanlandscapesupplies.co.nz.
We are at 140 Tomato Road. Look for the big green wheelbarrow or ring 825-0577.
If you have ever thought about volunteering, now is a great time to contact Volunteering Waikato. Their website makes it easier than ever before to find the right opportunity in your town. Get involved in your community, boost your CV, meet new people and learn new skills. For more information, go to volunteeringwaikato.org.nz. Volunteering Waikato, enriching lives.
And you're finding it awesome this evening. Kia ora, good evening, Whangara and Raglan. You're listening to Raglan, talking to Raglan at, what's the time, two and a half minutes past six. And let's have a look at what's been happening, what is happening, what the weather's doing, all that sort of stuff. Weather. Last time I looked, it was 13 degrees going down to about 11 overnight, going down to 2 later in the week, up to a maximum of about 15, 14, so not all that warm. pressure, reasonably, I suppose it's not high, it's not low, it's on the low side, I suppose, 1,013 hectopascals. Some thundery showers. One forecast is saying for tomorrow afternoon, another one's not saying anything about those, except that there might have been some around today. The northerly is supposed to be 20 knots, northwest, 3 meters, and the high tide just about almost 10 minutes ago, 2.8 meter high tide. The days, of course, steadily getting longer, much the same as last week, about 5 minutes in the morning and 5 minutes in the evening. So we've now got 19 minutes past seven as the sunrise and 27 minutes to six as the sunset. The things which are on this week, as usual, the Harbourview Hotel has the trivia night on 7 o'clock, and it's all the usual list of things happening, which is on our raglanradio.com events list. So if you want to have a look at that and see how many things are on each day, in particular the Raglan Ramblers are going rambling tomorrow morning off to the... Well, I've got two places, Karamu Walkway at the north end and off to the Kariki Waterfalls, not all that far away. So two in one tomorrow morning, usual time and place, 9 o'clock from the, from James Street, somewhere near the Catholic Church, down towards the bottom of James Street. Also happening at 9 o'clock, the Stuart Street Hall is going to have a Raglan Naturally Tariti workshop. They've been running quite a lot of them, $20 for that one. I think you probably need to book in for it, starting, say, 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Then outside the community house tomorrow morning and tomorrow afternoon, 10 till 4, there's going to be something they're calling DORA, Digital On-Road Access, free digital help for basically for connecting with the health service through your phone or through your computer, and showing you how to get the best out of it. So that will be parked somewhere outside the community house tomorrow morning and tomorrow afternoon. The community board also meets tomorrow afternoon. A bit more about that in a while. That's 1:30 in the town hall supper room. Thursday, start of an exhibition by the Karawi Quilters and Crafters on at the old school till the 15th of August, 10 till 2 each weekday. And on the 15th of August at 6, they're going to have the results of a silent auction and celebrate the exhibition they've had. Also on Thursday, the old school starts Tamariki Day Class, Clay Class rather, 6 weeks of that for $160. Again, need to book in for that one. That's in the afternoon, 3:30 on Thursday. Friday, 7 o'clock, the Road to Patagonia surfing film that they've shown several times. They're showing it again on Saturday, but it's booked up. So they're adding an extra showing on Friday at 7 o'clock at the old school. And so far that one's not booked up. Also on Saturday, they're showing The Taste of Things, which they've shown before, a French romantic comedy for foodies. That's on at 4:30 at the old school on Stuart Street. $16 for all the films there. And Sunday, 1 o'clock in the town hall, there's a circus theatre show for kids called Rock Bottom, a backyard circus. Cost for that is a koha. And the last thing I've got down is also on Sunday afternoon. It's a new film to the old school. This one's being shown at 4:30 called Unsung Hero, about a musical family who moved from Australia to the United States and how they get on with that, and of course lots of singing, hence Unsung Hero. So yep, 4:30 at the old school on Stuart Street Sunday for that one. Things happening this week, or which have happened, I suppose it's happening, because the regional council, together with some of the district councils around Hamilton, including ours, are getting together for a future-proof public transport meeting on the 2nd. So that's looking at the whole series of reports that are on the regional council website if you're interested. In particular, I spotted that 70% of Raglan's bus passengers are children, which is much higher than all the other bus services, but probably accounted for by the fact that the others have more frequent bus services, whereas ours tend to run mainly at school times. So it's not too surprising that most of the passengers on them are school kids. It's not very convenient for most other passengers. And I also noticed that one of the other problems we've got is that it might actually improve marginally, but still less than half the buses run to within 5 minutes of the correct time on the timetable. And remarkably, I noticed that even though we have got so few buses. We're not very far behind Cambridge in terms of number of passengers. So we've got 22,900 passengers every 3 monthly quarter. They've got almost 3,000 more in 26,700. They have an awful lot more buses than we've got. Their buses start at 6 in the morning and go on past 9 o'clock in the evening. Our start at 7, finish at 6. They've got almost an hourly bus service. We've got 4 a day with 4 or 5 hour gaps in between. And yet their numbers of passengers is not much greater, though there's a higher proportion of adults in there. Also notice that when they have to, the regional council does increase the buses that we've got. So there were quite a number of students being left behind. So they extended what they call the Fota Fota Assist Bus, which now starts out at the Hamilton Boys High School rather than starting out at the transport centre. So maybe we need to get more buses overcrowded and we might end up with more buses. Also, as I say, the community board's meeting tomorrow afternoon, 1 o'clock. Sorry, that's 1:30. I've got the first half hour for questions, if people want to go along and ask questions. Some of the things you might want to ask about are the Manu Bay Breakwater. They've held a stakeholder workshop. We'll listen in a bit to what Chair of the Community Board, Dennis, had to say about that. I understand that some of the surfers are not happy with the idea that anything should be done with that breakwater. It is, of course, one of the world-renowned surf breaks, whereas the boat ramp is just yet another boat ramp. How many of them would be around the world? Probably thousands, if not millions. So that's one of the items on the agenda. The Raglan Community Board plans are also on the agenda. We haven't yet seen what they are. We might see them tomorrow afternoon. You never know. So that might be something else which is coming up. There's quite lots of things on the agenda, but not sort of any great moment as far as I can see. Closed circuit television, they say they're finalising the agreement with Hamilton City. Civil defence might get a meeting in August to finalise it and get people to volunteer to take part in civil defence. Soundsplash, council staff are starting work on next year's event. They still haven't told the community board what they think is reasonable in terms of fees, but promising to do that. We're near a walkway. If you've been down there, you'll have seen that it's open, going to close again for putting up the final railings there when the concrete is set hard enough. Still a problem with lighting along there, and they're saying that lighting is being looked at by the Parks Department, along with lights on the bridge that are not working. That's really old news. I think that's been true almost the whole time I've lived in Whangarei. So, yeah. Greenslade Road Playground, they're looking at having some traditional Māori play aspect to that. The campgrounds, they're finally getting around to doing some work on the stormwater and roading there, which they aim to finish by Christmas. Wainui and Papakua car parks, they're repairing those and again aiming to get them done fairly quickly. Does seem to me they're spending an awful lot of money on car parks at a time when the council is supposed to be hard up and putting our rates up a lot. The community board also has a discretionary fund Which should be being topped up by about 14,000, but there's no mention of that on their agenda. And they've got a lot less than they, it's about 12 or 13,000 they're being asked for by three different groups. That's the total, not each group. So St. Peter's is asking for a stained glass window. Tomato Tennis Club's asking to improve their tennis court. And there's a Raglan Country and Blues Festival that also wants some money to pay the local country and blues artists. And the other thing that's on the agenda, usually not controversial, is the names proposed for the new developments on Rangitahi. So, as I say, no great things on the community board agenda as far as I can see, but happening 1:30 tomorrow afternoon. Other things that I've spotted which are in the news are that Raglan Arts Weekend is going to be in October, on track to be one of the most festive events with installations, workshops and music. Make it more immersive and experiential. And they're going to include 65 artists in 42 studios with the usual wide range of art involved. And that there's also going to be an official opening on the 24th of October. So we'll be seeing a lot more publicity about that by then. That's also the council. They had a meeting yesterday at which they were saying that they wanted to keep more rewards, the alternative costing about $50,000. So they'd need to redo their representation review if they weren't going to carry on with what they decided from the last one. Of course, the government wants to get rid of Māori wards. It's going to cost anyway, because they're going to have a ballot. There's also going to be free training on defibrillators happening at the library on the 14th of August. I'll tell you a bit about that nearer the date. There's a story which is in the Waikato Times, which I'm not sure whether it was generated by the Karajoi Project or Rangitahi or who, saying a surge in rodents around Raglan has nothing to do with the Rangitahi cat-free zone development, and saying that there is a rodent issue, but it's not just in that area, and that they're planting thousands of trees across Rangitahi, which will attract birds, and if only half the homes had cats, then they'd destroy those birds. Also saying that they've got a contract with Karajoi Project to have 45 traps across Rangitahi, and Karajoi Project's Crystal said, "We trap on Karajoi as well as all over town, and we get the surge in autumn and winter because it gets colder and the rats are looking for food. Nearly 500 families have traps as well as rural properties trapping in their backyards. Most catches by cats are feral cats, not the sort of cats people have at home, as they've got the food without having to go out and catch it. Cats also catch what's easiest, which is usually birds, lizards and insects rather than mice or rats." And they talked to Steve Sale, a retiree who's lived in Rangitahi for 2.5 years. And he said that they had been living on Robertson Street. And when they were there, they caught some rats some mice in the basement workshop, but haven't had any problems since. And that when they were living on Robertson Street, their cat there would always catch more birds than rodents. So another story which you'll probably see more of. What else have we got? There was also a court case which another road death last year, I think it was. Somebody who had taken cannabis and hadn't, or was disqualified from driving at the time for too many demerit points, was delivering bread early in the morning, weaving across the road. Also had a domestic incident the night before and didn't get much sleep, and managed to kill one person and injure another, had minor injuries himself. The judge said that he found that he was genuinely remorseful and deserved the maximum 8% discount from the sentence, which was 12 months home detention and disqualified from driving for 3 years and paying $2,500 to the charity of the victim's choice, or the victim's family's choice. And the only other news that I've spotted is that COVID's still around and a number of cases down across the Waikato, although from 208 to 179, number in hospital down marginally from 29 to 26, and the number of deaths across Waikato, though, still 7 in the last week. That's it for what I've spotted, I think. Let's have the bottom of our items, and then we'll listen to that interview that I mentioned about Dennis talking to Aaron about the community board, and then see if we can manage to fit in something for the Green Party conference has been on this weekend. And it seems to me the main publicity has been about whether they're going to throw one of their MPs out of Parliament. And it seems to me that there's much more important things that were discussed there. So I thought I might play some of the speech, which was given. It is available online if you want to look for it on the Greens Facebook page, but thought it was worth listening to as a reminder that the media tend to concentrate on what they see as the more interesting, maybe in the long term, less important things. Aaron and I were talking about it this morning. If you want to hear more about that discussion, listen to what he and I said. It's on the Raglan Radio podcast page. But anyway, here's bottom of the hour items.
Journey into the world of world music.
One Sunday with Rodrigo from Brazil.
Next Sunday with Javier from Mexico.
90 minutes of music from 6 p.m. every Sunday evening.
Here at Irirangi of Aingaroa.
And podcasted at reglanradio.com.
Musical Journey Sunday, 6 p.m.
And replayed every Tuesday from 4:30.
When in the West, listen to the best. Raglan Community Radio, 98.1.
Now let's listen to what Dennis, chair of the community board, had to say to Aaron, morning show host, last Friday, I think it was. As I say, there was some discussion about the breakwater out at Manu Bay, and my understanding is that the surfers don't totally agree with it, but Dennis had something to say on that too, so not too far out.
We're going to turn now for our interview with Dennis from the community board. Morning.
Morning, Aaron.
So on our list of things yesterday, in actual fact, there was a workshop around the issues with the Manu Bay break wall, and we've been waiting for things to happen there. It's been moving very slowly, we all know that. So was there something constructive come out of yesterday?
Well, there was, I guess, in the last 6 or 8 months or whatever it is, but since the last meeting, Tonkin and Taylor and Ecos have been doing some reviews and some modelling and things like that, and looking at what options there are for to address the issue of overtopping and surge up the ramp and those types of things, and try and make the boat ramp a safer place. And they did come up with 5 options that have varying effects on the problem and also on the surf. A couple of the options definitely had a reflective wave reflecting back out into the surf, which would be a problem going forward.
Because it's a recognised surf break or registered or something?
Registered internationally recognised surf break.
Yeah.
And we need to consider that. Options 3, 4, and 5, which were different, whilst they had a reflective wave, it tended to reflect back more onto the shore rather than out. And the comment from Ecos was that it would, it's probably not significantly different to the wave that is coming off the existing ramp.
Okay, right.
So there are potentials that going forward. There was quite a lot of discussion around the technicalities of the 3, 5 options and that sort of thing. We had representatives from Iwi, from Point Boyd Riders, from Sports Fishing Club, and that sort of thing there at the meeting. And I guess the stances of the various groups hasn't changed a lot. The Point Boyd Riders really don't want to see any change or any modifications to the ramp that we presently have. The Sports Fishing Club are still adamant that we have a problem with overtopping and we have a problem with the surge up the ramp. So basically the outcome of the meeting is that council will go away and review the past work that's been done and any obligations that are still outstanding as to what was built and against what was designed and that sort of thing, and make sure they've ticked off all the boxes.
So that's all the past stuff.
Well, this is for the what's there at the moment. There's still a lot of debate around that the ramp that was built is a different footprint to what was designed to be built.
So when they last did the work, I thought they just did a new wall. Did they redo the ramp as well?
Oh, sorry, not the ramp. The wall. My apologies.
Okay.
Yeah. We're talking about the wall.
Yeah.
I talk about it as being one thing, but we're talking about the breakwater itself.
Yeah. And so
council have want to just make sure that they've got no obligations there that are outstanding, and then
by which they mean it might have been built wrong.
Well, there's still debate about between the various groups about the height of it in relation to the old ramp that was there.
It could be the same height, but because it's got a slope on it,
there's a whole lot of things
you can get overtopping going on.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of different things with the breakwater.
Yeah.
It's definitely got a more gentle slope on the seaward side.
Yeah, which was to stop the reflections, which I presume.
But encourages the overtopping.
Yeah, and I mean, I've seen pictures of boulders sitting on the ramp that should not be there, so there's obviously a problem.
Yeah, there's a problem there.
You can't have a boat, you either have to get rid of the boat ramp or you have to get rid of the boulders. You can't have the two of them together at the same time.
Yeah. And the other thing that came out of the study is the erosion on the other side, on the shore side of the breakwater or the boat ramp below the Kiriopa property and all the way basically around through past Bryant Home onto the beach.
Yeah.
And the increased erosion that's occurred there over the last 20 or 30 years, which may or may not be relative to the building of the breakwater. But that's got to be addressed as well. And council are looking at that because we do have, as you're aware, erosion issue all the way from basically there right through to Kopua.
So they're going to have to work out whether the erosion is natural erosion that would have occurred anyway or whether it's been affected by having a wall there.
I don't think it's a matter of looking at that. It's a matter of how we address it going forward, how we manage the erosion in the various parts of the beach.
Because that's
going
to be an issue for going forward. Like houses at Elves Place, that's potentially an issue for them?
I don't know if you... When you get that far around, I don't know how much erosion's happened there. If you look at where the tattooed rocks are, and I was out there about 18 months ago, I wouldn't have thought there's been a lot of erosion around that particular area.
So further back toward Mano Bay?
Further back towards Mano Bay and further sort of east toward, on long, you know, Naranu Beach, Wainamu Beach, all the way to Tukapua, we're obviously seeing a hell of a lot of erosion going on there.
I haven't heard people talking about this issue much at all, actually. If it's just natural erosion, there really isn't a lot we can do, I presume.
Well, councils always have, when we had the problem with the Surf Life Saving Club Tower, council had the approach of natural retreat, hence the tower got removed and let the sea do what it's going to do. But then when you come into where the airstrip is and that piece of land there, which is eroding quite significantly over the last 18 months, it's whether you can let that continue or whether you look to do something with it. So at the moment, I don't know what their plans are on that, but
it's certainly being reviewed. Based on the information over the last 80 years there, like it has cut back in and then built back up, and now it's in the process of cutting back in, so it might not even have cut as far as it's been before. It's hard to know. But the only, like I've said, have you seen that map with all the different lines from
We got that, and I've got all that stuff when we were looking at it with the Surf Life Saving Club. But then you look at, you know, where at the camping ground there where they put the tyres in, 40 years ago, and that sort of thing, that's held that area, but back towards the harbour entrance, we've got a lot more erosion there. But then when you get a bit further on, we've got a lot more build-up of sand too. So in some areas it's building up, in some areas it's eroding away.
Yeah, it's unpredictable.
Yeah, so it's where the – yeah, so I don't know. They've got a group of people within council now looking at all that, because it's not just an issue at Ragland, it's an issue all the way up the coast.
Well, we know what's happening at Port Waikato. That's frightening for the people who, well, some people have already lost their houses.
Yep, that's right.
And I remember the previous mayor saying he went to a very tense meeting up there when it first started. People wanted to know what council was going to do, but in the end, we built houses on sand dunes. So, yeah.
Our Surf Life Saving colleagues up there lost their whole, you know, clubhouse and everything like that. So, yeah, there's been some significant changes up in that area.
Yeah. Speaking of that sort of thing, I was wondering, someone made a comment the other day, we're about to spend some money on redoing the roading through Papahua, or has that happened and I haven't seen it?
I don't know if it's happening, but we were about to do it, yes.
Yes.
No, I don't think it has happened.
But it's coming.
Yeah, it's coming. Yeah,
it's in the works. So we've got that erosion happening beside there as well, which according to Shaw Mead, is a direct result of the changes to the bridge 10 years ago. And I haven't asked anyone about that recently, but someone said to me, if they're going to spend all that money on the roads, we want to make sure that they don't get chewed up by the sea in a few years. So is there something happening? Like, ultimately, I think what I've been told, we need to build a groin under the bridge to get things back to where they were. And I'm not the expert, I'm just saying, you know, what I've been picking up.
Yeah, like you
said. Is anyone working on that?
It's still on the agenda of the Papahua Board.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. And we did have a meeting some 12 months ago with council to look at options there. But it hasn't progressed beyond that at this stage. But it's still on a list of to do.
Okay. I've been asking about this since before you were on the board, I think. And
people keep saying something's going to happen.
Yeah, I know. And I'm just kind of surprised at how, because I've seen the changes, there was a sudden change a year or two ago.
I debated the issue with council about 8 months ago, I think, because they were talking about doing a whole lot of planting along there, and I sort of
as a solution,
and I sort of said, well, it's just going to continue, so why don't we actually look at what's been done on the northern side of the footbridge in front of the changing sheds, where, you know, years ago they just built a small concrete retaining wall, and do something like that from that side from the boat ramp side of the bridge right through to the boat ramp, which wouldn't be a significant cost and would address the issue.
I think Shaw's comment was that the removal of what effectively was a groin, they've pushed it back effectively 24 metres.
So you still have to put the groin in.
So you would potentially still... You know, get 24. If you didn't have the groin and just had a wall, it would just scour out under the wall eventually.
Yeah. No, you'd still have to put the groin in, but if you did both, then it should alleviate the problem from what we're told.
Mm. All right. So at least I'm glad that something's bubbling away in the background on that one. Any news about another one I'm always asking about, the CCTV cameras that the business community is hoping will come into town? I know this has caught up with lots of other councils and organisations.
Short answer is I don't know, to be honest. It is something I need to chase up because, it was caught up in a district-wide review of what cameras are going to what areas, and it was also tied back into Hamilton City Council where the monitoring will be done from their control centre. I'll just make sure it's actually on the list because it should still be on our Works and Actions list for the Community Board.
Okay. The We're Near a Walkway, we can use that at the moment, can we?
You can use it. I personally haven't been on it since it's been modified or extended, but yes, you can use it. There's a temporary handrail in place at the moment, and I believe July, August, they are going to put it, it'll close again, we'll have to close it again for a week while they put the permanent handrail back on, and then it'll be all go for Christmas.
Okay. But we can walk on at the moment. It's just flat concrete. It's not that exciting to walk on. But
no, but it is wider. It's a bit easier and that sort of thing. And just ask people to be where it transitions back into the bridge. It does get a little bit narrower. Just ask people to be a little bit careful around that area, particularly cyclists and skateboarders that are hurtling along there at a rate of knots. You just need to slow down a little bit for pedestrians in that area.
But it'd be so smooth. The concrete's so smooth now, Dennis. You've got to go really fast on the skateboard.
I'm sure I would have enjoyed it at that age too.
Yeah, yeah. Where was my thing? So there's several bylaws up for comment at the moment, which is a council-level thing. But the motorsport bylaw, has someone on the community board's had comment to make about that or been submitting about that?
Yeah, motorsports events bylaw. Because of all the discussion on it in the past, we have had someone on the community board have a look at it. We don't have a lot of comment about it. There was a couple of minor things we possibly suggest on it and that sort of thing. But it is out there for people to submit on at the present time. You need to be quick. I think submissions close on Monday. So if anyone's got any thoughts or wants to submit on it, they'd better get it done over the weekend and get it in.
You haven't heard from Ruapuki if they're looking at that out there? I imagine they are.
I'd imagine they should be. They've been fairly vocal in the past, so they need to submit as well if they've got any concerns they want to raise, and then they can actually talk to their submissions as well. So they'll have the opportunity to talk to council.
I know you've got the stuff you're reporting on to the community board. Civil defence is one of those things. Has the civil defence manager been, what's he called, the emergency manager?
No, everyone keeps pointing at me and I'm trying to avoid the job. But no,
there's a staff member though. There's a paid person paid Scott, to do this.
Scott's a council rep, is the paid member from the Waikato District Council to do that. We're looking at a meeting in 4 to 6 weeks. And I've just got to talk to Scott about how we sort of attract people who are interested in being part of that committee or working group. Well, it won't be a working group at this stage. We have a draft plan, and it's really a matter of trying to get some people into various roles within that plan that can meet occasionally just to keep the plan up to date and also take a leadership role if in the case of an emergency, and be they in comms, be they in logistics, be they in various other aspects that we need that we've got within the plan. So we've just got to work out how we tap people on the shoulder or get people to volunteer, or if anyone is interested in being a part of that civil defence team going forward, get hold of myself or Lisa and that sort of thing, and we'll certainly be interested in having them on board.
What sort of things do you need? I know we're involved because we're radio, but what other stuff?
I'm just trying to think. You got me on the hop. There's about seven functions within it. Logistics, there's sort of accommodation, there's an iwi representative, there's a medical side of it, those types of things. So that we can get to, you know, people that are vulnerable if we need to, if we lose power, you know, if we've got an emergency of some sort, we can make sure that they're all catered for and things like that. So it's just having someone that leads various small groups within the plan.
And we know we've had enough emergencies in the last few years around the country. We know what's required. And there was actually, I saw something in the news. I just read a headline about a council over on the East Coast being criticised for the way they handled things during the cyclone last year. So I don't know what the details were.
Okay, no, I don't know.
But I imagine there's been a review over there.
Yeah, I've seen a bit of criticism of the environmental regional council over the Wairua Harbour mouth, but that's the only one I've seen recently.
They've got big issues over there, bigger than us, I think, in that regard.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they've got a harbour mouth they have to keep clear all the time, and so that the water can get out if they do have a flood, which I think was part of the problem in the recent flooding in Wairua.
Okay, because they haven't even finished recovering over there, and they got more. Yeah, that's not pretty. What else are we going to be talking about here? We kind of the Wharf Project. I thought that was finished, but is there a couple of little things to tick off yet?
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, there's a couple of things happening down there. I think there's a bit of signage still to go up, and I need to go for a drive and check that. And also, there's a bit of some resurfacing happening on the boat ramp. There's a bit of money available still to resurface part of the boat ramp, and how much that'll be, because the budget's fixed, is subject to what the costs are going to be. So they have someone quoting that at the moment. But we'll certainly be looking at the first 20 or 30 metres where the reinforcing's coming through, and it's actually quite a hazard at the present time.
Oh, yeah, okay, right.
So that will definitely be resurfaced probably late July, August, I would think, looking at timeframes now. And it'll be done in two stages so that the boat ramp stays open at all times. So
okay.
It'll be done on sort of maybe two-thirds, one-third, half and half, whatever.
One side's open,
one side's closed.
That does bring up the issue of a boat ramp fee to fund that sort of thing. I know you submitted as community board, as chairperson to the council, that there should be a boat ramp fee, and one of the staff, some staff in their wisdom said, no, we don't need that. Are you still trying to get that through?
No, I'm not pushing that at this stage.
Okay.
I still think it's an option because it does give us some revenue for maintenance of boat ramp fees, and most boaties that I've spoken to over the time are in favour of it. We're not talking a huge amount of money. We're maybe $90 or $80 or $100 an annual fee, and then maybe $10 daily fee if you only use it occasionally, and that sort of thing. And if the money went back to the boat ramp, boat ramp maintenance, then it's a burden removed from the ratepayer.
Yeah, and we have so many visitors coming who are not ratepayers. So
yeah, that's right.
Plenty who are, but also plenty who aren't. So have we managed to get Privet off the? No, I shouldn't even ask about that.
Yeah, Privet's been removed from the community board agenda. I hope
that is if
a
people
bigger problem for the community, particularly if you drive between Hamilton, well, Fodder and Ragland. It's incredible.
I think that's a regional council thing, isn't it? Like noxious weeds?
Well, it's gone from noxious weeds list. That's the problem. And
has it been taken off?
Yeah, it's been taken off noxious weeds.
Whose idea was that?
I don't know. That's my understanding.
Yeah.
Someone in their wisdom has decided it's not a problem. And then I think it was a problem, was believed to be a problem for asthmatics.
People who get hay fever get affected by it, yeah.
Hay fever, I guess. Lots of things affect hay fever, even grass seeds. And things like that. So, but yeah, the Privet one I think went off the noxious weeds list some years ago, and we've certainly seen an increase in the amount of it growing on the side of the road between here and Fodder, that's for sure.
Yeah,
particularly around Tiuku and around Fodder itself.
Have I interviewed you since that we did the tour of the wastewater plant?
Yes, we did.
We had an interview
just after that.
Straight after that, okay. So we won't worry talking about that. I think that's pretty much everything. I did talk to Extreme earlier in the week, and we touched on the Tuku Recycling Centre. They believe that the ball is in the court with council staff at the moment about what to do out there, looking at the different options of, do you just keep it how it is? Do you put the centre somewhere where people can't find it, who aren't from the area? Do we go to, I know the options talked about were like an actual pickup service out there, like
it's still being looked at. I think the problem, challenge with Extreme Waste, it's the cost. If they do anything out there, they're not reimbursed at the moment by council.
Not adequately for what they're having to do.
For what they've done.
Yeah.
I personally favour a collection, even if it's only a two-weekly collection. And I think, that would be my preferred way to go and then get rid of the waste centre. And that sort of solves that problem. But, I'm not sure where the council guys have got to with that one.
Yeah, wishing it wasn't there, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, because I think they did comment that this doesn't happen anywhere else in the district, and that certainly they're not going to create any after this. Because the problem, people, if you're wondering, is that it's just there's no staff there, so people abuse it.
Rubbish just gets dumped. It's not apparently as bad as it used to be, but yeah.
Yeah, without its supervision.
It's an opportunity.
Yeah, the cat's away. Yeah. Have you got other stuff you're working on that?
Probably only the winery reserve. I had a quick talk to Glenn yesterday. From
is that staff member?
Staff member from Waikato District Council, Parks and Reserves Manager,
yep.
I think his role is. Just about what we're going to do about the parking there this coming season, and also we want to. We've had past discussions with the mountain biking guys or cycling guys with Dirk,
yep.
Of opening up a cycle way through the Wainui Reserve and then across the top that connects basically Wainui Reserve with the new concrete footpath that runs all the way out there,
yep.
Just doing that final connection. And I'd like to see all that in place before Christmas. So I've asked them for a meeting in next month so we can look at how we move that whole Wainui Reserve Parks development plan ahead and get some sort of concrete plan going forward.
It'll involve
a lot more discussion with the stakeholders, obviously, because there's a lot of work to do with them about their aspirations for it. But we need to come up with a plan there that sort of can be embedded into the LTP going forward.
Okay, and the parking, has parking been adequate? I mean, I know the paved park fills up right away on busy days.
No, the parking's not adequate. Everyone parks. And on a busy day at the moment, if the overflow's not open, which is pretty regular, not so much at this time of the year, obviously, but in the summertime, then everyone parks on the no parking lines, and then we merrily walk around and dish out bloody parking tickets. And that sort of thing, but yet we haven't opened the overflow parking. So we need to get our act together and open, make sure the overflow parking's open. Basically, it's open all the time, other than maybe a couple of days in the middle of the week we might have stock in that paddock.
How much is a fine for parking there on the no parking, I'm wondering?
I think the last one I got in Main Street was about $25, I think.
Well, see, in Tauranga, in the middle of the city there, it costs $20 to $30 just to park your car for the day anyway. So some people from other cities from Auckland probably think, oh, that's right, that's just my parking fee, that's fine.
If they happen to catch me.
That's okay.
I'll take the chance.
Yeah, and if I have to pay it, well, it's cheaper than Central Auckland, so.
Exactly.
Yeah, so maybe they need to up the value there as well. All right, Dennis, thank you for coming in.
Not a problem. Thanks, Aaron.
The community board meeting is next Wednesday. Is it here in the town hall?
It's in the town hall, yep.
Okay.
We will be looking at one going forward. I did get reminded by Carla the other day that we need to look at one at Tiuki probably before the end of the year. So we will be looking at probably, I'll run it past the community board members at this meeting. Maybe the next one's at Tiuki.
Okay. Thanks for coming in, Dennis.
Thanks, Aaron.
And still 14 minutes, 30 minutes away from the top of the hour, but before moving on to listen to what I thought was an interesting speech by Chloe Swarbrick at the Green Party conference, but the media seemed to have ignored it. Let's listen to the top of the hour items. Then I'm hoping we might have time to fit in Crystal talking about karaoke project. We'll see how we're going.
Hi, Raglan, Wayne, Super Values. Come in and check out our great specials with over 1,000 every week. If you are a gold card holder, every second Tuesday is for you. Present your card and receive an instant 5% discount on your purchases, including all existing specials. Our community cash grants are available to all local clubs and organisations. Our New Zealand Post and KiwiBank staff are here to help. We look forward to seeing you in store and being part of this great Raglan community.
Tired of shivering through winter or sweltering in that summer heat? Stendi Electrical is here to help with our top-notch heat pumps. Our team of experts is fully licensed and trained to install the latest energy-efficient heat pumps in your home or business. And if you don't know which heat pump is best for you, we can give you a free quote. We also provide servicing to ensure they're always running at peak performance. So don't wait until the next heat wave or cold snap. Call us now for a free quote. 825-0214.
Looking for a conference room for your next get-together? Raglan Holiday Park's Hui Room is a modern facility that caters for up to 35 people. And with large screen, bathroom facilities and a full kitchen, it's perfect for team building, meetings, events and more. The Hui Room is only a few metres from the beach, which is great for extra activities, and accommodation is available for anyone coming from out of town. We do great discounted rates for locals too, so give us a call on 825 8283 today.
Raglan Community Radio supports the code of broadcasting practice for the broadcasts of its radio programs. If you hear something you find offensive or intentionally misleading on our station, you have the right to complain. A formal complaint about a specific program or incident must be made within 20 days of broadcast of that program to Raglan Community Radio, PO Box 126, Raglan.
You're listening to Irirangi o Whangaro, official station of the Maui Dolphin.
Which is where you're listening to Raglan Talking to Raglan at just give it 10 to 7. And as I was saying to Aaron this morning on the radio, the Green Party conference over the weekend got coverage for things which weren't mentioned very much there, but not for things which were, even though the media was there. So I thought I'd make up for it, even though it's not directly Raglan related, but many of us are interested in what's happening with environmental issues. So here goes.
Policies are driven by the same kinds of political and economic decisions that drive rising rents. Let's take a second to unpack that connection because I think it's important. The trickle-down system that turned housing in this country into a run-down state-sanctioned casino is the same system that hands fossil fuel executives license to fry the fundamentals of life on Earth as we know it in order for them to make a quick buck. It's the same system that allows businesses to pay poverty wages so CEOs can get rich while workers struggle to get by. It's the same system that allows those businesses to spew commercial waste into our lakes and rivers, avoiding the cost of their pollution. It's a system that privatizes profit and socializes cost. Regular people are being forced to underwrite bad business through bad law and nonsensical economic policy. Now, as I said to all of you yesterday, this system wasn't handed down to us by the gods. The social and environmental crises that we face aren't inevitable or natural. They are man-made, as is the system that underpins them. Now, as depressing as that might be to realize, I tend to think that, in fact, it's incredibly liberating. Precisely because this system is made up, it can be remade. And New Zealanders can have true freedom. Freedom I hope one of our co-deputy prime ministers is listening to this. Freedom to move around and between our towns and cities like they do in so many other countries, where politicians get over themselves and make necessary investment in public infrastructure, like frequent, affordable, and high-speed rail. Freedom to plan for the future from your warm, dry, stable home. Freedom to make decisions about your life with guaranteed minimum income for all. Freedom to learn in a well-resourced and universally free education system which values your contribution. Freedom to explore our native forests, teeming with native birds and other wildlife, because we did the right thing and protected them. Real freedom for everyone to live a good life. The kind of freedom that comes for looking out for each other and the planets that we live on. Not the pretend kind of freedom spouted by politicians who want to start pricing up and selling off everything and anything to the highest bidder. That is not freedom. That is privilege for those who can afford it, and increasingly only for those who inherit it. We are talking about the kind of freedom that comes from upholding each other's basic rights. From recognising, my friends, we live in a society, not a market. We need each other. But one of the coolest things about this vision is that it's actually already incredibly bloody popular. Most of the people in this country support a wealth tax, but neither of the legacy parties want to touch it. 1.4 million people rent in this country, yet somehow it's currently run by landlords. 77% of this country wants stronger action on climate, yet the Luxon government is stuck in fossil economics. And our people need that action. Think back to those real-world leaders at the coal-fired face of the climate crisis in South Dunedin. They are at the front lines of the consequences of the climate crisis and the trickle-down economic infrastructure deficit. But they aren't waiting for anyone's permission. They're acting. That is the sort of community building that inspires me. And that the government really needs to get behind, to devolve power and resources to. That South Dunedin community are putting their values into action, because they know that if they act now, the future can be more secure. Meanwhile, out of the real world and back in Parliament this week, I asked Christopher Luxon about his government's draft emissions reduction plan. That so-called plan tells us that in less than a year, the Luxon government has made decisions to take us off track to reach our climate goals in 2035. Even worse, they've got no idea how to uphold a net zero 2050 commitment. This government is treating the Zero Carbon Act goals, which, by the way, they voted for, as though there's some kind of vague corporate KPIs to be fiddled with as convenient. But those goals, as we know, are not just numbers on a paper. They are the scientific fundamentals for life on Earth as we know it. And not only is this government knowingly increasing emissions, they're knowingly increasing inequality too. According to their own official advice, this government's decision to overly rely on blunt market mechanisms like the emissions trading scheme, instead of stopping pollution at the source, will cost the lowest income households in this country four times as much money as the wealthiest. Christopher Luxon responded to my question in the House to type, avoiding the actual question and telling me that's why we should all just support his government's trickle-down tax cuts. Trickle-down tax cuts like the $2.9 billion that they handed to landlords, which they continue to say against all reality will put downward pressure on rents, which have instead seen rents rise higher than the average rate of inflation. Trickle-down tax cuts that our Reserve Bank tells us will only serve to bid up the cost of housing. Trickle-down tax cuts that will see 64% of the benefit go to the top 40% of households. Now, for the record, Luxon's government are paying for those tax cuts by raiding future benefit increases, using revenue that would allow us to reduce emissions and continuing to pay some disabled workers as low as $2 an hour. This is what we in the Greens mean when we say, that you cannot divorce climate and social justice. Because whether it is in Dunedin, Northland, Gisborne, Nelson, Auckland, or anywhere else in the country that faces climate change-charged extreme weather events, the evidence is clear. Whānau already struggling to make ends meet on a good sunny day. We'll see that hardship compound if this government continues to enable the climate crisis. That climate crisis, though, well, it's good short-term business for the few who are happy to leave an enormous human, environmental, and financial bill in the not-too-distant future. For those comfortable to privatise profit and socialise cost. This month, the government also celebrated increasing the number of families being evicted from public housing. So we called them out for allowing more than 20,000 more New Zealanders to fall into hardship because incomes aren't keeping up with rents. They are also comfortable with making a joke of climate action by reopening oil and gas exploration, a change that would increase emissions by triple what their so-called emissions reduction plan aims to reduce by 2050. That is the equivalent of 420,000 more cars on the road in the next 26 years. This so-called plan has intentionally shredded policies that were in place only a year ago to develop a fair and equitable transition strategy, to support workers and the regions to manage the change to a thriving zero emissions economy, and to implement a just transitions program. Earlier this year, Christopher Luxon spent a lot of time talking about hard decisions that his government would have to make. Well, those so-called hard decisions have looked an awful lot like passing the buck. The two sectors responsible for more than two-thirds of our climate-changing emissions, agriculture and transport, haven't so much been put on the back burner as chucked in the oven at 200 degrees. Luxon's government is astonishingly even more regressive than John Key's national government. Climate change has been removed as an objective in the Luxon government's policy statement on land transport, something John Key's government had included way back in 2015. And not only is Luxon's government refusing to do anything meaningful about agricultural emissions while setting up a pseudoscientific smokescreen on so-called no additional warming against a backdrop of serious concern from the Independent Expert Climate Change Commission, Luxon's government are also hoping to quietly remove agriculture processor-level emissions reporting requirements that have been in the law since Key's national government in 2011. Now, the answer to all of these gnarly emissions reduction questions, Luxon's government say, can be found in the $400 million odd Fund for Agriculture Research, which, it's important to know, the previous government announced back in 2022. And as we uncovered and was just reported this morning, this government has actually cut tens of millions of dollars from. Christopher Luxon, he wants to keep us all distracted, though. He wants you to think that all we can do is rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic. He wants your dreams limited to mere tinkering, keeping our eyes off the prize of turning this trickle-down economy the right way up into a system that works for people and the planet. He wants to keep the public looking in the other direction, whipping up hysteria over the use of karakia while kids go hungry and the NBR rich list grew an extra $23 billion this year. It's convenient for him, for us, to stay distracted and divided and to not hold his government to account. That is how those who currently hold power hope to win. It is convenient for Christopher Luxon for us to forget that when he was at a leaders' debate less than a year ago, he personally committed to halving child poverty by 2028, only to then intentionally undermine those very targets last month and allow for more children to stay in poverty. And they almost got away with it too, but the Greens found it in the fine print and we drew it to the public's attention. Luxon and his government want us to stay distracted while he opens the way for mining CEOs to put our native species at risk and pollute our rivers. That is why today we are asking Christopher Luxon to take some of that personal responsibility he likes to talk so much about. Yesterday, I talked about how we can build a sustainable mass movement to transform our world. And today I want to tell you about how you, out there, can join us and how we can start this change right here, right now. Over the past month, the Greens have been running a campaign to put real people's stories to the statistics that tell us that the 1.5 million renters in this country spend disproportionately more of their income to live in older, colder, mouldier properties than those who own. Hundreds of you have told us directly that the unpredictable and unrelenting, ever-increasing cost of renting causes you financial stress and to forego the essentials. Hundreds of people have told us that they are suffering from property manager inaction and sometimes a legal overstep, and of landlords refusing to spend a dime on basic maintenance. Hundreds of people have told us about not wanting to raise issues about their leaky, cold, damp homes for fear of being booted out the door. We've heard from New Zealanders living in rentals with rotting window frames, from renters with mushrooms growing from the floors, from those with peeling wallpaper and windows that don't close. The rental housing in this country is making our people sick. One person told us that after paying their rent, they are left with just $10 to spend every day. Another told us about how the increasing rent means that she lives on two-minute noodles so that she can ensure that her daughter has food and clothing. Aotearoa has the most expensive housing for renters in the OECD, and the quality is damn poor. And renters can't put down roots in their communities, having to shift homes every time a landlord evicts them or ups the rent to an unaffordable amount. Renters spend an average of under 2 years in any given house at any given time. How's that for a solid foundation on which to build a life and plan for the future, eh? That's not security, it's not freedom, and it's not fair. Housing is a human right, but more than that, adequate housing is a human right. And I don't think it's crazy to say that we all deserve a warm, safe home where we can plant our feet and know our place in the world, where we can build communities, raise a family, and realise our dreams, big or small. This ain't some new age wokeness or whatever the latest culture war baiting buzzword is. We signed up to the 1948 Universal Declaration of Human Rights, drafted and passed without dissent by the United Nations General Assembly. And for the record, that UN was created after some of the world's most devastating wars in hope of creating long-lasting peace by ensuring basic standards for member nations and their people. But in the succeeding 70 years, the basic tenets of that social contract have been broken as elected representatives have sacrificed goals of shared security and prosperity and freedom in favour of individual greed and gain.
Well, I think that gives some idea of the way that that went. So, as I say, surprised that it didn't get more coverage in the rest of the media. You're listening to Raglan Talking to Raglan on Raglan Community Radio, and just end up by listening to Crystal, who also talked to Aaron, I think it was the day before he talked to Dennis. So here goes.
Hey, we've got the morning show here on Raglan Community Radio, and I want to welcome to the studio and to the microphone Crystal from the Karioi Project. Good morning.
Good morning. Kia ora.
So the Karioi Project, you are co-presenting Science Night tonight, are you?
Well, we've joined with the Environment Centre, which is always an awesome night when we do these things together. Mm. And we had this great speaker from the New Zealand Penguin Initiative that we've been doing a bit of work with. And she's coming to tell us about the Little Blues because they're the experts, and just telling that story. And it's a great night to just do a bit of socializing together. Are you going to come?
Probably.
You were there last month, weren't you?
To fall asleep first.
Yeah. So it's going to be cool. Just a bit of a, you know, information night and a bit of a social night. And I think Jasmine's got a few snacks and
usually,
things,
yeah.
You know?
She actually provides quite well.
Yeah. Our Jasmine, but the Jasmines will supply snacks.
It's a double Jasmine night.
Yeah, it's a double Jasmine.
Sounds like some new species of plant. did you guys as the Karioi Project get in touch with them because you had penguins nesting and you were trying to look after them?
No, they actually, I can't remember if it was last year or the year before. I think last year they got in touch with us because they are trying to, I guess, connect all the groups around New Zealand that are working with the little blue penguins. Or little penguins. Yeah. And that's their passion, and then they provide support in terms of monitoring information and tools and sometimes training. So we've just connected with them, and Georgia and I met with them last year. And so they connected and said, hey, we'd be keen to come out. And we said, oh, why don't you come and do this talk? So, yeah, it's really cool.
So they're vulnerable, aren't they, the way they nest? It's not like they go up trees. Vulnerable. They don't go up trees, they're penguins.
Yeah, and also they come to land every night. So like our seabirds, the grey-faced petrel that comes here, obviously, they only come during the breeding season, and then they're off at sea for, you know, a good part of the year. But these guys come back and forth all the time.
They sleep on land.
Yeah, they come back at night.
How does the oi sleep? Just sitting in the sea?
Yeah, sits on the water.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so, yeah.
Well, maybe they use their autopilot.
Well, they probably have an autopilot, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So super vulnerable. I'm surprised there's any left at all.
Yeah, well, there are still some significant roosting sites, like everywhere, like down the coast in the South Island.
Yeah.
And they're actually dotted around everywhere. But they are also still here, which is really exciting. But they are a super small bird. And like only like the weight of like a thing of butter, like 500 grams.
A pound of butter.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, half a kilo, I'd call it.
So how tall do they stand?
They're just like tiny.
Are they all fluff? Like, mostly consist of fluff.
They've got kind of an interesting feather kind of system. You know, it's a very waterproof kind of. They look really streamlined. They don't look fluffy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're half bird, half fish in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Not biologically, but the way they live.
Mm.
But I presume there's a lot of down underneath, like insulation.
Yeah, and waterproof, insulation. So, yeah, they're pretty cool. And
they're pretty similar to a seal, really, aren't they? Mm-hmm. It's like a different type of seal that came from a different evolutionary path.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, actually, Aaron. I'm just saying yes, but
I don't know either, but I'm describing what I look at.
What you're seeing.
I'm not
yeah.
the science expert, so I can get away with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, pretty cool bird. We have them all the way from our beach to, we've seen breeding sites all the way from the beach and to Manu Bay and different sites in between. And as, you know, most people will know, like, all those areas are prone to, you know, big wave impact. They breed low down on the coast, although they can climb higher up. Most of the ones that we're finding are very low down, often in areas where there is erosion, and we've seen cliffs, you know, fall down and erode down and the nests disappear. But they do come back and they'll make a new nest. And you can kind of, you know, we find places where they're roosting because you can see from the guano and the mess that they leave. They're really smelly birds. So if they're in a burrow, you know they're there. They're really smelly. And we know of at least three chicks that have fledged, probably four. One of them was a twin.
Okay.
And we saw them pull right through to the end of the, you know, fledging, kind of fledging time.
Do they normally just have one chick?
They have one or two.
One or two. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but the kind of downside of it is that they, again, like, you know, vulnerable to predation, like all our birds. And also, you know, we've kind of gone in, because they don't tend to burrow too deep, we've even once seen, like, an area where pigs have got in and have dug them out.
Oh, right.
And found, like, the little bodies, which are pretty sad, where they, you know, the pigs will smell them and dig out the eggs and that. So,
or
dogs as well.
I know, because they're so smelly, the dogs are just, they'll know they're there from miles away.
Oh, yeah, and also coming on land. So we've had people bring in dead bodies. Like, we've had one carcass that we've taken in for post-mortem, and they identified the bite marks of dogs in the neck. So we know.
Just, like,
they just attack them, yeah. Yeah, we just have to be really careful that we're controlling our dogs, and ideally just staying away from that side of the beach is really a good idea. And they come in, you know, at dusk and then leave early in the morning. So if you're a late or early walker, staying away from that south end of the beach and not letting your dogs roam loose around
frightened?
That coastline.
Are they frightened of us, or do they just kind of bumble their way up the beach into trouble?
They do bumble, but so we were at Tiritiri, Matangi, I don't know, 6 weeks ago or so, and we spend the night there as a team, which is pretty cool. It's an offshore island near on the east coast of Auckland, and it's predator-free, and we went sat on the coast just after dark and watched them come in, which was really cool. Like, they've got a bit of a bigger colony, and they've got, like, nesting boxes that the birds use, so you can just see them sitting there in the nesting boxes.
Oh, okay.
And just open up the top, and they're just sitting there, and they're quite happy, and they don't run away. But when they're coming on to land, like, if there's any light or if they think that there's any danger, like, they will veer away or, like, kind of retreat back and forth. And so we had to sit, like, really quietly and then watch them come in and hear them all calling out to each other. And,
yep.
Yeah, it was so cool. But, yeah, they're quite cautious, but it was just so awesome seeing them. Like, we had the red light to kind of watch them, you know, the red light on your torch.
So they couldn't.
Yeah, so it doesn't upset them.
Okay.
And, yeah, it was really cool just being able to sit there and watch them and kind of preening around and calling out to each other. And, yeah. Okay. So that's the kind of stuff that's happening here, obviously, as well. And, yeah, it's awesome. Like, two seabirds, not just a grey-faced petrel, also the little blues that we're protecting.
Wow. All right. Well, there must be other birds, though, too.
Seabirds.
On the mountain.
Yeah, heaps of other birds.
Yeah,
we're just talking about seabirds, like, right on the coast. But, yeah, tui, bellbird, like, kaka, all sorts are there.
Yeah. All the usuals.
All the usuals.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the bats.
Oh, and the bats. Mm. How are the bats?
The bats are good, yeah. We're kind of trying to locate a few more bat monitors so we can do more.
A bat monitor is an electronic item.
Yeah, it's like an acoustics. They pick up the sound frequency from the bats.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Actually, we had a really amazing post on Facebook, and I think Bexy followed it up, that a guy had picked up a little bat.
Found it somewhere.
Found it, yeah.
And let him pick it up? How did that work?
I can't remember the details. I'll ask her next time I talk to her properly. But, yeah, so actually found one, like, somewhere in their backyard. And I've talked to a few people recently that have said, oh, is there bats here? Because I'm pretty sure I saw some, like, at night when I was out on the farm. And and they are often around farmland and, you know, remnant bush and either native or introduced trees, big trees that they use for roosting. So, yeah, we definitely know we've got the bats around, and all the predator control we do helps those birds. And
bats.
And bats.
Yeah. Some other birds you want to help at the moment, the matuku.
Yeah, the matuku.
So you've got a matuku muster. What's that about?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. It's a new thing. We've been doing a bit of work with the Toroparu Hurepo Wetland Restoration Project, which is run by Ngāti Whakamahurangi.
So where is that exactly?
So the wetland is to the south of Karioi.
Yeah.
It's a big wetland, about 500 hectares, and the marae is just right there on the edge of it, and lots of, you know, farmland and still some beautiful remnant bush. And so we've been supporting them and doing the predator control. But part of the reason, not only did I want to just protect the wetland for wetland's sake, but also because there's remnants of these matuku or bittern that are still there. And so there's a little bit of funding from DOC around the Endangered Species Fund.
Yep.
And so kind of targeting those areas, like, where we've heard them, because they have this booming sound that they make.
Can we make the sound?
Oh, well, sure.
When we were searching for it on the website. If I turn up the side speaker, you might hear it, because you won't hear it over the main one. So let's try that. Well, it's not very loud. There we go. Can you hear that at all?
No.
It should be coming out of there. We can't hear it on the radio.
Oh, good.
It's booming. You still can't hear that? Don't worry, we definitely can be heard on the radio.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, if you like that sound, we have something in store for you.
Yeah. Tell us, Crystal.
Yeah. So, yeah, so we're teaming up with the Love Bitten Project. This is this awesome woman that does this all pretty much voluntary, I think. And she's organising all these groups around the country to do this Matuku muster. Sounds pretty cool. Instead of sheep, we're mustering Matuku.
Yeah.
No, which means that we're basically going to go out at 3 consecutive months and for a couple of nights and listen out for these birds. And I know that doesn't sound as exciting as maybe some of us think it is, but basically when we first started looking for seabirds, that's pretty much what you do. You spend time at night when you know they're coming in or when you know they're around and listening to the sound of birds, right? And so this is what we're going to do with these guys, is just have as many people as possible at different hotspots, so wetlands around the region, so not just the one at Toraparu, but also we've got a wetland here in town, we've got a wetland out on Ohatara Road.
What? Yes, yes, Craig, bitterns, they are birds.
What?
I just had a text from Craig.
They are birds.
What says, there's bitterns, those birds with question marks. I think he wasn't sure if we were talking about birds or some other type of animal.
Oh, right, yes, they are birds.
They're birds.
Thanks, Craig. So they fly. Yeah, they do fly.
Actually, and that's a relevant point in New Zealand because so many don't. But
yeah,
this one does.
Yeah. So anyway, very cryptic, kind of secretive.
Yeah, why do they describe it as cryptic? That's
because it means you don't see it very often. Because most people don't hang around a wetland because they tend to be
means confusing.
No, cryptic means secretive. In biology.
On biology, not on crosswords.
Yeah, cryptic, it means when you're hiding from predators, you're tucked away in the grass, like your colouring is maybe, you know, helps you disguise yourself from, you know, the rest of the habitat.
So Craig wasn't asking if they're birds, he was asking if that booming sound was them. Yes, that booming sound was a bittern.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's the male, I think. Anyway, we're going to be listening out for them, and we'd love as many people as possible to come along. You can schedule it in because it's planned for September, October, and November. So many fun things on, you know.
Yeah,
like,
what else
if you don't have a social life, you just have to go to our pages and you've got one.
Yeah. Is that social? So going out into the fields at night and being quiet.
Yeah.
It's
a new type of dating.
It's a new
type.
Is that, what, is that what
the
is that
the bitten and boyfriend muster? If you need it, muster them up at the bitten.
Is the bitten dating? Is that what the booming sound
they
is?
They are.
Though?
Yes.
That's what that is.
Yeah. Yeah. Join the bitten in there or Matuku in their dating evening with the bitten.
Excellent. Oh, okay. If that doesn't appeal, what else you got, Crystal?
Yeah. Okay, and then we have bait deployers, which are awesome. So you get to go up the mountain and you get to go up places that no one else gets to go to.
Mm.
We train you up, which is very simple, and you have to carry a bit of stuff.
Yeah.
But you go up the mountain it takes about 3, 4, 5 hours max.
Yeah.
All up, and you have a great day up there filling bait stations.
If you're super squeamish, are you going to be like emptying the bait stations as well? Is that, if you're super squeamish, might not be your thing?
Yeah, but it's not squeamish. It's just like a plastic bag with some old toxin in it. Like, it's not dead rats or anything.
Of course, it's a bait station.
Yeah, it's a bait station.
The animal's not going to be there.
It actually feels really clean because you don't have to deal with maggots or dead stuff. You just
put this lovely little
bag of toxin, which is all wrapped up, so you don't have to touch. You don't have to touch the toxin. You put the little bag in the bait station, you close it, and you walk away. It's really simple, and it's a great day up there. You get to see some beautiful bush that no one else gets to see usually.
Okay.
And a great day and lots of cake.
Okay, and what's this? folks, I'm looking at the Karioi Project newsletter, and there's this photo of Crystal and two other women dressed up. What are you dressed as?
We like cave woman.
All right, okay. Power Our Rangers Into the Future, coming soon, August 24. What's that?
So that's
our Give a Little campaign,
and we've kind of tried to zhuzh it up a bit so to make it entertaining for people. You can blame Lenny.
Job done.
You can blame Lenny.
Lenny's smart. Like, this is Lenny's idea, but you had to do it, not him.
Yeah. No, he's in it too.
Oh, he's in it
too. This is the least offensive picture we could find.
Just going on at the Karagura Project at the moment.
little teaser there just to get people, you know, interested and excited about donating to our great cause. So we're trying to raise about $30,000, which is for an off-road side-by-side that we need to get up and down the mountain.
Vehicle,
yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like someone said to me, that sounds like a lot of money. So we're just trying to aim for something that's going to be really helpful. It'll also help cover some of the costs of running the vehicle and maintenance and all that. And if there's anything left over, if we can get a good secondhand one, we might put a little bit of money into buying an education van as well, because the one that we've got is getting a little bit old.
Okay, so that's the one you run around for the kids?
For the kids program. But it's just our major kind of give a little campaign to us, the community, to get behind and support the cause. And so we've got a little film coming out to give you a bit of an idea of what that's all about, and that's coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Is that going to feature all these cave people?
Yes, few camps. So it's kind of bringing, you know, Power Our Rangers bring us into the future. So we're coming out from the dark ages into the future of having a vehicle.
See. Right, there's a high concept thing.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. Hey, and on the sort of serious topic of funding, you got any comments about the announcement from the head of the project at Manga Tauteri?
Helen.
Sanctuary Mountain saying that they have not got enough money, they might have to close.
Yeah.
I mean, they need more than 30,000. They probably need like 3 million.
They need about 5,000 a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got really high turnover because they have a big fence. So when people say to me, are we going to get a fence? I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Unless you want to fundraise for it. But, I mean, Manga Tauteri is amazing. It was like, it's a state-of-the-art, like, you know, amazing concept, and it's like a bird zoo, isn't it? And it's huge, and it's got had an amazing community-led project, and they need more support. Yeah. Mm. And actually the support they need, even though it sounds like a lot of money, it's actually nothing when you consider where it's located and how much money floats around those communities. But they're basically kind of putting up their hand and saying, hey guys, this isn't sustainable for us to continue like this. We need secure funding that will help us do our operations.
The government funding has dropped, but it wasn't necessarily this government which is getting the blame for all that, and usually rightly so, but it was actually, it was probably when Chris Hipkins became Prime Minister, I imagine, or something. There was a big... What I read was that before this current government, the last government did cut their funding through DOC.
Yeah, and also a lot of money went into Jobs for Nature. And that's dropped off now. And we all knew that was going to happen. But, you know, Regional Council has committed to projects like ours and Manga Tauteri and Porongia and Meg on the East Coast long term.
Yeah.
They've got funds set up to, like, that are in 4-year cycles. And that's the kind of thing that we need from DOC, is that 4-year cycles of consistent funding so can projects who actually run on a shoestring. Like, these guys are, you know, they've got thousands of Kiwi. They're translocating Kiwi all across the country and stocking, you know, Kiwis like in Wellington, Taranaki, everywhere. They've got kakapo there, you know, in their fence sanctuary. They've got so many amazing birds, and they just need that consistent support. It's relentless otherwise trying to find the money to do this stuff. And that's the appeal.
And we know that.
They're not shutting down as in like they're not going to operate.
But I think that's kind of like the headline.
If they've got a massive reduction in funding, they're going to have to cut jobs. They're going to not be able to do the things that they're doing. And what they're doing is cutting edge, and it's amazing. Mm. So we should be supporting them. And I think this is just a cry for help.
And the Karagura, well, it is literally.
Yeah.
It was a cry for help.
Yeah, of course, you got to keep supporting us as well. But
Yeah. And the radio station too.
Yeah.
Someone donated.
And everyone else.
We've got to give a little. Someone gave us $10 the other day, I noticed. Thank you very much, whoever that was.
Yeah. We had someone donate $60 the other day, which is awesome. I love all those little bits of money. If everyone did that, we would have no money shortage.
It's actually very – well, we'd have the money. I go there.
Yeah.
It's encouraging when people do that.
Yeah, it is.
Hey, folks, we've been talking to Crystal from the Karagura Project. Thank you for coming in.
And if you have been, thanks for listening to Raglan Talking to Raglan. Here on Raglan Community Radio during your Whangarā. It's just coming up at 29 minutes past 7. So if you have been, thanks for listening. If you haven't, probably waiting for the music to start. Hope you might manage to join me next week anyway, 6-ish till 7:30-ish, here on Raglan Community Radio. And the music we've got lined up is Night Don't End.
Mother can